Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins.
With his visa ban lifted, former paratrooper Carl Bushby was able to continue his long journey around the world on foot. All that stood in his way before finally returning home was just a series of major international conflicts, an unprecedented global pandemic, and a logistically hazardous sea that no one had ever swam across before. This week's episode is Carl Bushby's Goliath Expedition, Part 2.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
I'm coming home. Baby, I'm coming home.
What should be his final song when he finally makes it back to Hull and he's walking down the street to his house?
Yeah.
What should be playing?
God. I'm a survivor.
Just kidding. It's Reba McEntire.
Mama, I'm coming home.
Yeah, I think so. Probably. Or... man, I mean, at least the final few walks you
Life is
play.
A Highway?
Yeah, you gotta play Life is a Highway. Play the final countdown and then Life is a okay. Highway.
I think it's a medley. I think we do a girl talk mashup of Tom Cochran, Life is a Highway,
100%.
Little Reba, a little Ozzy. I feel like we could...
Crazy Train.
Train. There's gotta be something about... I don't know, walking through
I would walk
Russia.
500 miles yeah. And I would...
We'll get that one, but in Russian.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then we'll have just gunfire playing throughout the back the whole time, too.
Just running from the... And also, you have to turn the air conditioner all the way down to negative degrees, but...
Yes. Wow. But in some places, you got to turn the heater on to 200.
Yeah, so it makes you feel like you're there, no matter what. Desert wintry tundra, you can feel like you've been there. The places he's gone, and what, especially the places we're about to talk about today, not that the Bering Strait wasn't, like, very remote, but just... cliff sides, I'm like, this looks like something you see shot from a helicopter or a drone, because it is not where people live.
No, and it's rarely where they travel.
Nobody walks there. Definitely nobody walks there.
And there's something to be said about going to a place that no one else has gone before. I mean, I think that's why so many explorers do what they do, and cave divers and stuff like that. At the same time, if you're the first one,
earmuffs.
You're a bit of a guinea pig,
you know,
when it comes to the lay of the land and how you're gonna safely traverse everything.
Yeah. Well, and even just how the logistics of it are even possible, because literally no one's done it before. So you're welcome, every other person who ever tries to do this, because Carl Bushby has figured it out.
Bushby did it. They said he wouldn't do it, and he did it anyways.
He wouldn't do it. Bushby's coming home. He is coming home, though. We're already at home, though. We live here in Dallas, where we're at. And not only that, we're going to perform here at home. But you're hearing this on a Wednesday. This Saturday, we are performing at the Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas. It is imperative that you are in the house for me and Christy in the... I don't want to say magic we're going to conjure, but I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I would say if you want to be there for the global event of the I'm going to say century. Yeah, Carl's done a lot. You know, we've gone through a pandemic and
whatnot.
Lots of natural disasters and wars. But still, if you want to be there for the event of the century,
mm-hmm.
October 4th, 8 p.m., doors open at 7.
Much like with every show that we do, live shows, if you've been to Full Moon Energy or even back when we did individual stories for where we were going, but especially mm-hmm. Full Moon Energy, you go like, the moon, I know about the moon. You don't know shit. Same
you don't
thing
know shit.
About witches. You're like, oh, I kind of am familiar with, no. And I we're promise. Learning so much. And even we can't know it all, but we know so much more now than we did at the beginning. My jaw has dropped several times. I've gone on several rants and I'm like, I got to save it for the stage. There's just so much to wrap our arms around. And we cannot wait to show you who the witch really is. The concept, the archetype, whatever you want to call it, who these women are and have been as heroes.
Truly just the lore and how like it's all evolved and the mm-hmm. and truth and fiction and where it separates is quite fascinating. It's way more in depth than anyone would have thought. But also, we're going to be doing spells and shit, and we need everybody's energy there to. We're trying to shift timelines.
We're going to fix everything.
Yeah.
With one positive night, just wishing warm glow, the roof's going to bust off the Texas theater like the fucking end of Ghostbusters when it just shoots up to the sky. So mm-hmm. sorry,
we're all
going to
ascend like the end of The Witch.
They were like,
naked up into.
There was a so rapture didn't happen. October 4th, 8 p.m., Texas Theater. See you there. Go to sinisterhood.com/live shows. If you cannot, absolutely cannot be in Dallas, we understand. Say it again. Be there or else. If you come here in person, October 4th, 8 p.m. But you can also, if you're across the pond, across the world even, if you are listening, Carl Bushby, and you want to tune in, go to sinisterhood.com/live shows, and you can watch our stream from Keysway. And if you're going to be walking at 8 p.m. on October 4th, you can also watch it on demand from the showtime all the way through Halloween. So no worries, Carl. We know you got a lot of places to be, so we want to make it easy for you to tune in.
You could, Carl, make a bit of a detour and we'll let you on stage for like 5 minutes to give a spiel if you'd like.
We let you ask the people, but, you know, ask them for, you know, stuff, whatever you need on your journey, whatever you might need along the way, advice, I don't know, tips.
We have very lovely listeners who would give the shirt off their back, which she probably needs. So stop on by.
New pair of boots at the very least. Go to sinisterhood.com/live shows. You also hear about Crime Wave at Sea there as well, which is coming up in November. We can't wait for it. So sinisterhood.com.
Super excited. I've gathered a lot of decor, which is really just my own personal things in my home. Exactly. We are going to be making a trip to Party City. Or not Party City. What am I talking about? Spirit. Sorry, Party City. You're for when it's not spooky season.
You're never because they've all been closed down.
That's
right.
They went bankrupt. RIP Party City. The party had to end at some time.
Closing time.
Unlike Robert Earl Keen, the road goes on forever, but the party did end.
In
bankruptcy for Party City. So,
oh man,
we'll go to Spirit Halloween instead because we got to get some. More decorations.
Oh, you know, well, you all know it's going to be decked. You're going to have so much fun. We cannot wait this Saturday to hang out with you. It's going to be a blast. So hang out with us in person if you can, online if you can't, and if you can't make it live, you can still watch it until Halloween. So don't miss it before she flies away. Anyway.
Well, we are so excited. It's going to be a ton of fun. Go to sinisterhood.com/live shows to get your tickets now because the time is nigh, my friends. It's upon us.
I can't wait. Can't wait.
It's going to be super fun. Well, in the meantime, speaking of fun.
Let's get walking.
Oh, Carl, when we left off, he was having a hell of a time.
That's one way to put it. Oh, Carl. Yeah. He's like, can I finally start again after I walked 3,000 extra miles?
Dude.
That's so many extra miles.
That's a commitment, though, that few have to really see something they did not have to do, but have decided to dedicate their entire lives to,
to see it through
to stick to the rules you set up for at the beginning. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. When Carl Bushby left Washington, D.C. in late 2014, he was carrying the weight of a fight that had almost ended the Goliath expedition for good. After years of being blocked from Russia, he had walked across the United States to petition the embassy in person. The visa ban was lifted, and Bushby called it
the toughest battle of the expedition, and it was fought without taking a single step.
That hard-won victory gave him the green light to re-enter Siberia and push west again. After 2 years of waiting and walking the wrong way across the U.S., Carl had about 17,000 miles to go before home.
That's the other thing you got to think about is he's holed up in D.C., you know, America, walking across the states, reasonably moderate climate. And it's like, I'm fighting so hard to go back to fucking Siberia. Yeah. So cold, you know, and you're like, oh, good. I get to go back now.
And when your home stretch is still 17,000 miles, you're like, I can finally see the light at 17,000 miles. Like, I couldn't even begin to start that journey.
Yeah. And to like, you got a kind of a pause that makes you think, oh, well, maybe it's going to be over and it's not even my fault that it's over. Like, it's so impossibly over. And like, that will be sad, but I can deal with it. And you maybe like pre-grieve and then you get the thing like, all right, saddle up, bro. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. You're almost like, it wouldn't be the worst thing if I didn't get to go back. Oh,
good.
We are. Okie doke.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
You've probably seen a million ads for hair growth products and thought, sure, like that actually works. I did too, until I found out that Nutrafol isn't like the rest of them. Nutrafol is physician formulated. It's clinically tested and dermatologists recommend it.
Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand trusted by over 1.5 million people. You can feel great about what you're putting into your body since Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF content certified, the gold standard in third-party certification for supplements.
While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests its final formulations using advanced hair measurement tools like hair counts and pull tests to track real improvements in growth, quality, shedding, and texture. And it's not just backed by studies. Their research is published in peer-reviewed journals and vetted by doctors, ensuring scientific rigor and reliable results.
Adding Nutrafol into your daily routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription required. Automated deliveries and free shipping keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20%. You'll have access to free one-on-one naturopathic doctor consults to support you on your hair growth journey, and a Headspace meditation membership is included.
Love that. Love both Hell these yeah. things. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code CREEPY.
Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code CREEPY. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code CREEPY.
By 2015, Bushby was back on Russian soil, picking up from the far northeast where he left off. The terrain was still brutal, with rivers that froze into highways in winter and turned into impassable bogs in summer. He was still forced to adhere to Russia's strict visa timing of 90 days at a time, squeezing as much distance as possible before the paperwork expired. When his time ran out, he would leave the country, often flying back to Mexico to live cheaply until he could return. In 2017, Bushby reached Mongolia, a milestone after more than a decade in the Russian wilderness. On August 8th of that year, he walked into the country's capital of Ulaanbaatar, describing the country as a rare relief from endless cold, subarctic forest he had just passed through. But even with the milestone, forward momentum remained fragile. Bushby lived with the constant awareness that borders could close, money could dry up, or politics could intervene at any moment. Still, the moment was a cause for celebration as he had effectively walked the full width of Russia's Far East from the Bering Sea to Central Asia.
Yeah, once you make it out of the frozen, icy freezingness that you're just like, I don't even care where I'm at. It's so great. I want to kiss the concrete. I just want to kiss the ground. I don't care.
So cold. Carl teamed up with a few fellow adventurers from the UK, US, Turkey, and Mongolia and acquired 10 Bactrian camels to help carry gear across the Silk Road route. The idea was to form a camel caravan to trek thousands of kilometers across Mongolia and Kazakhstan. For 5 months, the team trained the young camels, and in autumn of 2017, they set out westward for Ulaanbaatar. Despite covering about 700 miles, the expedition within an expedition was short-lived. Disagreements flared among team members, and by early 2018, the camel caravan effort dissolved due to interpersonal conflicts.
Could have had a fleet of camels and everybody
tale
fought.
As old as time.
You fought and you had to sell your camels. Man.
I mean, when you're already so tired and at your wit's end, and now you're trying to train camels to help you, that adds a layer of frustration that Carl didn't need.
And it's also, I heard an interview with him and he was like, you know, some adventurers have certain personalities and it's kind of a singular type of gig that you like to do where you're the one in charge, you're deciding everywhere. So when you start to try to get literally even just a handful of people, 5 or 6 people to agree on insert whatever here, route, gear, what to wear, terrain to take, all that stuff. He was like, who's in charge, right? Because like one of the guys that joined him was on not a similar trek, but like a much, much shorter version that he was going to walk, you know, this long stretch that probably would take a few months. And let's go along with me. Well, that's all well and good until there's a big fight and you have to sell your camels.
Yeah. So. I've been in too many improv troops to realize that the more you add, the harder it is to coordinate anything. So you get one person, you're showing up for rehearsals. It's just you. You add 7 people to a troop.
Suddenly.
It's like herding cats to nail everybody down.
Yeah, and especially if there's not a clear, like, a coach to say who's in charge or whatever, then suddenly it's, well, why should I even listen to you? And it's like, well, first of all, you should all listen to Carl Bushby because he just walked 1,000,000 miles and he knows a thing or two about getting across places.
And but, you're with him. You're on his expedition, kind of.
And we're all guest. Not, and we're not doing a literally nameless people in the Mongolian desert with Carl Bushby episode. We're doing a 2-part Carl Bushby episode. Like, stick with that guy. Like I said, he's the guy that is kind of doing it right. So, I mean, good for him for knowing when to cut his losses. And I could tell hearing the interviews with him various times, it was frustrating because you feel like you wasted 6 months thinking like this would be a really helpful thing. But you know what? You just cut your losses and fucking move on, dude. That's what I love about this guy.
I think it's the law of the land too. You just have to, there are no rules. So you can't get, I mean, there's a lot of rules when it comes to the countries, but as far as like what could happen on the road, you just got to roll with the punches because it's all just happening on the fly. You're figuring it out as you go.
Yeah, well, who's more of an expert than someone else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carl remained unflappable. From Mongolia, Carl turned west toward China, fighting fatigue, climate extremes, and the grinding loneliness of the road. Crossing China independently was another complex endeavor. As a foreigner on foot in remote regions, Bushby attracted the attention of Chinese authorities. In 2018, while heading southwest across China's Xinjiang and Gansu provinces, local police at one point tried to block his path and presumably wanted to expel him for traveling without an organized tour or guide, requirements in some sensitive areas.
Yeah, he was saying that certain parts of China, I believe it's sort of in the northern part, and they have an entire population called the Uyghurs who are in prison camps. And he said it's literally a militant police state, and it was very nerve-wracking to walk through that. And he said, I've been in all types of different government environments. And he said, that is one where it was like, I am in a very real police state, and I'm sure that completely changes the vibe of the tour a little bit when you're like walking by and you're like, I am only just one single man. And I know that there are atrocities on either side of me. And all I can do is just keep my head up and just keep on walking. And then good for him. When he passes through, he talks about what happened. You know, he didn't say like everyone in China is treated very nicely and everything was great. He's like, no, of course there were welcoming, kind people, but I did walk by torture camps essentially.
Yeah. You're seeing many parts of the world that few do. You have an understanding of what is really going on globally that maybe no one else in the world possibly could. I mean, even journalists haven't gone to some of the places he's gone, and certainly not all at one stretch. So he's seen things that most of us are meant to not see if those countries had it their way.
Yeah, where governments are, you know, our own government included, you know, governments sort of try to go, pay no attention to this going on over here. Like, don't look. And I think it's extremely valuable. The more Carl Bushby types we have out there who are willing to say, I'm going to go as an explorer, an open-minded explorer to a new place and come back and report factually what I saw. I saw a TikTok today recently. It was a person saying, you know, I think the next round of content creators are going to be more of an independent journalistic type of content creator, instead of going, look at me and my matcha latte and like, let's follow me to Pilates, more like, hello, I'm spending a third night in a row in Cleveland's Northeast area where, you know, or whatever, and truly getting like what he's getting, which is, I saw it with my own eyes. So the government can say what they want. I was there.
Boots on the ground type of journalism. I like
different pairs of boots until they run out.
Yeah. At least 9 on that one stretch, but overall,
sure.
It had to have been in the upper double digits.
Easily. I wonder if there's one type of boot that he likes the best.
Oh, or he's just like, I bet you find one that you're like, you try out several, but we all land on one that we're like, this was the best one.
Mm-hmm.
With some delicate negotiations, Carl narrowly avoided being removed. He reported that.
With a bit of luck.
An understanding was reached, and he was allowed to continue through China instead of being stopped. By late 2018, he had traversed into Kazakhstan, effectively bypassing the impassable stretches of Afghanistan and the Himalayas by taking the northern route through China.
You start to enter into an area where the United States and others have been in conflict. And he said, you know, you get to a certain part of the world where having, and he said, it's really only 3, and it's a U.S. passport, a Canadian passport, and a U.K. passport, that you start to get stopped a little bit more versus, you know, you're from Finland or Australia, you know, somewhere that's not a superpower trying to, you know, exert its influence in the region.
Yeah, yeah. In early June of 2019, Carl walked across the Kazakhstan-Uzbekistan border. Over the next few months, he proceeded through the ancient sites of Uzbekistan and then into Turkmenistan. Serving a Turkmen visa was notoriously difficult, but Carl managed to get a 30-day transit visa and even the required escorts. Turkmen authorities require that visitors have official guides. With their company, Carl made it to the country's southern border by late 2019. There, standing on the edge of Iran, Carl was forced to pause once more.
He said that getting a visa in Turkmenistan was more difficult than walking the Bering Strait. I mean, he's just like, it was so hard. It doesn't get granted. It's like, he said it's like harder than getting into North Korea. One of those just, they don't get a lot of visitors.
They don't want a lot of visitors.
Sounds like it. And then, yes, you get to Iran in late 2019. Couldn't be a worse time. I mean, not that there's ever like a great time, but late 2019 is when shit starts heating up.
Yep. It's when he's like, surely nothing just completely out of the ordinary would happen at this late in the game. Oh, buddy.
Yeah, he's like,
we got some news for you.
It'll be fine. The worst of it's surely over. And you're like,
perhaps.
It's like listening to episodes from 2019 of our show.
But if you like go back and he's walking through I wonder if he looking back was like, I saw signs that something was happening.
I mean, he just was like, I started to look at the news and I was like, oh, that's not great. And like, you know, he said like physically everybody was nice. He set out, he desperately wanted to go to Iran because everybody from Iran he'd ever encountered, everything he'd heard is that everyone was just a very kind people and very welcoming and open. And he just was like, not like the government though. It's kind of, you know, much like our government. I feel like there's a lot of very kind people that would open their doors to strangers that, you know, you start going with visa requirements and or you're on a ban list is the other issue, is that when a country like Iran gets put on a sanctions list, you can't try to get a visa. That's a crime that you started to do now.
Yeah.
To even try to visit it.
I was meaning more COVID, that as COVID he style. Was walking across, you know, in all these different countries, looking back, are you like, oh, that was when I was walking through XYZ, everyone did seem to be a little more ill than normal. Or, you know, you kind of see like how it's like starts in one area. I mean, he'd been in China and everything. And like, that would be interesting to hear how he kind of saw it all come together, if he saw any signs of it before America did.
Or even like you're in such a remote place that everything's like totally normal and you're like, oh, other places all of a sudden are like people are whispering about a vaccine or a virus or whatever. And it's like nobody even knows what's going
on.
And
now you're the person who's about to bring it to everyone because you walked through a country that had it. And now you're in a country that was, they don't want people there and you're there. And now there's a reason that they've now like said, this is why we don't want people here.
I'm fascinated. That's a good point about his just his immunity. Like, what does it do to the body to eat food from different places at all times and to drink different water and to breathe different air and different allergens and stuff? Damn, he's probably like a fucking, he's got a super immune system.
Yeah, he's got like a
handle it all. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. Iran was the planned gateway to the Middle East and Europe, but geopolitical tensions had rendered it impassable for him. With a British passport, Bushby found himself shut out of Iran. At the time, UK citizens were largely barred amid international disputes. Meanwhile, Turkmenistan would not extend his visa further. By early 2020, as Bushby waited for a solution, the COVID-19 pandemic struck, shutting borders worldwide. The expedition entered an involuntary hiatus once more. Bushby left his flag and gear cached at the Iran frontier with the Turkmen family for safekeeping and evacuated the region, eventually returning again to his standby haven of Mexico to wait out the storm.
I mean, you got to go back home to Mexico. I mean, that's kind of become your home at this point off the Pacific coast. You probably get kind of used to going back there, but like all of us, I'm sure it's like, I'll just go back for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. And luckily for him, they let him back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, please, I'm that same guy. I'm that guy. You remember that guy, the walking guy?
Me? What's please? That movie with Tom Hanks where he gets stuck in an airport?
Terminal.
Yeah. He's going to become like that because nobody wants him to come in. He's like, been everywhere.
We're not granting you a visa. Sorry.
By 2021 to 2022, it became clear that two crucial countries on Bushby's route, Russia and Iran, were effectively closed off due to global events. Russia's relations with the West had deteriorated severely, especially after the 2022 invasion of Ukraine, making obtaining visas impossible for the British adventurer. Iran was similarly off limits. Bushby and his supporters brainstormed an audacious workaround, Plan C, cross the Caspian Sea, and bypass both Russia and Iran.
Well, my stoic husband always says the obstacle is the way. And like, if truly, hey, there's one of the countries is in a really now a war that it is the aggressor on, and the other country is in conflict with the one that you hold a passport with and the other allies. Like, yeah, buddy, I'm sorry. Like, you can't. It sucks that something as pure as just a man in his boots trying to make it across the world has to get roped up in international conflicts. But he was like, I swim about as well as a cat in a bathtub. So I really do not want to swim. I'm not trained to swim. I'm almost 50 years old, if not already 50 years old. And then Russia invades Ukraine.
That's a hard time to learn how to swim.
Yeah.
In the Caspian Sea.
Of all places. Across the middle of it, by the way.
It'd be hard to learn in your backyard swimming pool, but let alone the Caspian Sea.
Luckily, he lived in Mexico on the coast, and he's like, I just was like, well, let me see how far I can swim. And he's like, I swam 10 kilometers out and 10 kilometers back, and I was like, done. And I was like, okay, I can do maybe 10 kilometers a day if I want to do it every day. And they kind of figured out the logistics and whatnot. But it's like, you don't even want to swim. You don't even know how to swim. You don't even like to swim, but you're like, well, I have to swim. And now you're swimming? This is a person who's unstoppable.
I agree. I'd also like to say, if you're going to set out on a Goliath expedition like this, I feel like there are some things you got to make sure you know how to do beforehand. And swimming is probably one of them because
he's like, I would get a walk.
You're most likely going to find yourself in a situation where you're on a disintegrating ice cap and, you know, or you got to swim across the sea. So it's much like when you go on Survivor and Jeff's like, you came on the show without learning how to make fire first, you idiots. Like you just should also know how to make fire if you're him too. And what berries you can eat and probably how to hunt and stuff like that.
I think that's kind of in the paratrooper training. I guess that's fair. If you're a paratrooper, you probably only have to swim as far as getting out and getting on land and running to your obstacle versus, whatever other part of the, being in the Coast Guard or the Navy or something. But
it is strange though that for such an elite group, you wouldn't have to be like excel in every area that is athletic in that way.
Well, I mean, he knew how to swim. He just said he hated it. He said, I swam like a cat in a bathtub. So I think
which isn't a good swimmer.
No, it's kind of like flailing. To me, it's worse than donkey paddling.
Yeah, that sounds like you have no control over what you're doing.
Yeah, well, they'll put a loop on your back or something to make sure you don't like get away.
This plan involved backtracking a bit, then heading west across the Caspian Sea into Azerbaijan, thus reaching the Caucasus region without touching Iranian or Russian soil. The catch? The Caspian has no passenger ferries in that remote area. The only way across would be to swim over 160 miles of open water. It was an extreme solution. Carl Riley noted on his website.
Not really something I signed on for at the beginning of this endeavor, but hey, whatever it takes, right?
At this point, Betty, I think it is. You've come way too far to let anything stop you at this point. You're going to die on your feet if that's what it takes.
For real, keep swimming because the cost is sunk.
In 2023, as the pandemic eased, Bushby moved back to Central Asia to execute Plan C. It was a staggering challenge for a man in his 50s, alone, with no financial cushion, no immediately available support boat, and little margin for error. He trained for months, then was ready to set out for the coast. He was joined by an American adventurer, Angela Maxwell, who herself had spent years walking across the world solo. Together, they retraced part of Bushby's steps to reposition for the Caspian approach.
Yeah, she's like in her 40s, he's in his 50s, and he was like, not a time that either of us thought we would be doing this, but there we were. And there it is. It's like
meet cute.
The equivalent of swimming from the coast of Massachusetts to like the New York state line. You know, I mean, it's like almost a state's width that you're swimming little by little.
Swimming in open water, I'm out. Of that length, especially.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for me. I would sooner walk 17,000 miles than I would swim 160 miles of open water.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not that I have it in me to do an Ironman at all, but a friend of mine does Ironman competitions, and the swim is in open water. Like, regardless of wherever they hold it, it's always you're swimming across a lake or whatever. And I'm like, God, not only did you run a marathon and bike a million miles or whatever, and then you swim across something that's just bobbing and moving you, and there's a bunch of people all around. At least here, there's only four other people with you, but any of that open wind that's going to hit you from the water is just what makes it like a game over for me.
I'm more concerned about what is beneath me.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
That's why I don't like to swim in open water or really any water where there's going to... I saw a fucking girl got attacked in it by a shark in 5 feet of water the other day. Her brother dove in to save her.
You got to.
Yeah, what a hero. But it's not for me. What's down there is not my business.
Certainly. The good news, the Caspian Sea is more like just stingrays and jellyfish and poisonous fish and not like a shark, but one might argue, would you be more likely to come across, I don't know, a school of fish that are poisonous or stingrays or whatever, if there's a bunch of little small things that can hurt you versus one or two big things that like the boat might be able to point you away from.
Yeah. Or those big things that eat the smaller things. You don't have those.
You don't even have those, so you're good to go.
The small things are often more deadly than the bigger things, just like we talked about with the bugs.
Ugh, yeah. I don't like anything swimming up in my wetsuit. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/live shows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. Starting in the spring, Carl and Angela walked 1,600 kilometers westward from Uzbekistan, across the Kyzylkum Desert in a barren plateau in Kazakhstan, all the way to the Caspian shore. This arduous desert trek took several months and concluded on July 18, 2023, when they arrived at a remote stretch of Kazakh coastline on the Caspian Sea. The next phase, crossing the sea, required careful timing and logistics.
Dude, the cliff that they're on is just like nothing. It's just like rocks, no people. And I'm like, you now get to walk down and walk into the water, and that's it. Like, it's not like a beach and people are swimming, and clearly people swim in this. It's like, well, I guess put on your wetsuit and let's just walk into nothingness.
It just gets harder and harder at each turn. There's not really any respite.
No, and it seems kind of like they're like, fuck it, yeah, let's try it. And no one has swum across the Caspian Sea in modern times that we know of that it's like been, you know, documented or something. So the idea that we're the first, how are we going to do this and not drown while doing it? I mean, you got a lot. You got a lot to plan.
Some things you just throw caution to the wind and hope for the best.
You got to.
Carl and the crew spent late 2023 arranging support. The plan was to swim in stages, resting on boats at night. The team secured two support vessels, one Kazakh and one Azerbaijani Coast Guard ship, and recruited two Azerbaijani national swim champions to join the crossing party. None of the four swimmers had undertaken anything of this scale, but all were determined.
And that's what he's like. We're both, you know, 40s, 50s. The champs were like in their late teens, early 20s. And he was like, very different physical ability and skill level. But no one had even tried anything that big. So it's like, who's to say you guys will be better than me? Oh, you will be, because you're professionals and younger by 20
You're younger,
years.
But at least if you need help, they're there.
Yeah, that's the plan. And to have some, that he said that it was like a larger vessel and then small, like harder, like really secure rubber vessels for them to like jump into the rubber boat and be taken to the larger boat and taken out. So from the footage, it doesn't really look like at any point they were going to drown or something. It's just fucking hard to swim.
Yeah. And exhausting.
It just seems so exhausting. It doesn't
Cold,
matter. Yeah.
Wet. No. All of it sounds miserable. Even when you're resting on the boat, you're still in waves. You're never going to fully get warm or dry.
And your body won't ever stop moving. It's just that feeling.
Oh, yeah. And then you get out and you're still like for days.
Logged.
It's like getting off a cruise ship. Mm-hmm. FYI. Something to look forward to. You'll feel it up for several days after.
My sea dog days. I used to try to go to sleep after doing five tours in a row. And I was like, am I on a waterbed?
Mm-hmm. On August 17th, 2024, Carl Bushby, Angela Maxwell, and the two Azeri swimmers waded into the Caspian Sea and began swimming west. They treated it as a long, quote, water obstacle, rather than a continuous swim. Each day typically featured two swim sessions, morning and afternoon, covering several kilometers before the team rested on the support boat. Managing rough seas and high winds was a constant challenge. Over the 32-day span, 27 of those days were spent swimming. They frequently faced violent rolling of crafts at night, which made even resting difficult. Maxwell, who described herself to Explorer's Web as
not a natural swimmer,
told the outlet,
it wasn't so hard physically, it was definitely more the mentality.
Carl agreed, also telling Explorer's Web,
I'm definitely not a swimmer, nor do I like swimming. So 32 days, 27 of which.
I feel like this is a good way to break it up, though, mm-hmm. for that mental part. Because if you do approach it as a long water obstacle versus like one trek you have to make, you got to break it up into chunks so it's way more manageable physically and mentally.
Yeah, he was talking about just his mental state in general and that several times earlier on, he was like, every time I thought about getting back home, I would just be like, well, that's never going to happen because it's so far away and so long and you get really despondent. And he was like, for me, focusing on whatever that next waypoint is, the next station I'm getting to, the one next thing, and just trying to keep my goals short has gotten me through this. And I think the swimming, especially given the Caspian Sea winds were so devastating that they said it just blew them off course at certain spots. And he's like, we would mark a GPS where we got out and then, you know, go back to that spot and get back in there. But even so, there's tides coming from the north of the sea and the south of the sea, and they converge in the middle. So he's like, even if we think we're going to swim 10 kilometers, we're getting pulled that really we're actually making our way 10 kilometers and have swum 16 or 20 kilometers. No. I'm like, that's also mentally taxing when you're like, I did 20 kilometers of work, but I only moved 10. My God.
Two steps forward, one step back, two strokes forward, one stroke back every time.
I'd be stroking.
Over 32 days, the team collectively swam over 178 miles, enduring fatigue, waves, and rough weather. They logged 132 hours in the water. Finally, in mid-September 2024, Bushby and company made landfall on the Azerbaijan coast. Carl and the crew came ashore to a warm welcome by local authorities and onlookers. It was reportedly the first recorded swim across the Caspian Sea, a unique solution to modern geopolitical problems. More importantly for Carl, it placed him back on solid ground in West Asia, now on the doorstep of Europe. He had walked, crawled, swum, and endured his way across nearly two-thirds of the planet. After nearly 26 years, only one continental barrier remained, Europe to the UK.
I'm sure that people did greet him because you've probably seen the fuss of what's going on and you're like, I'm sorry, they're swimming here? And they're like, yeah. They're like, no one does that. Like, well,
they've been out there for 178 days. Yeah, they've been swimming for 32 hours, 178 miles. I imagine there's a lot of people that are going to greet him, and for good reason. I would want a blanket, a cup of hot tea or something.
A warm loaf of bread. Like, we just made this for you. Just like, just no matter what you eat, tearing into
everything
it.
Hot. Mm-hmm.
The one thing about this whole deal that he's going on is that truly, though, the good stuff probably feels really good. You know, like the best, it's like the best cookie you've ever had in your life when you've just swum for 32 days. Like, you know,
the outdoorsman who it's not Bear Grylls. It's the other one. And every time I call him the other one, which he probably doesn't like because, sir, you are, he also has a show where he does, but he is solo. Unlike Bear travels sometimes with camera people. But he has often said in those remote places, the thing that like warms his soul and will get him through that mental hump is a warmed mug of water.
Mm.
Like literally just like because you're so cold and you're lonely just and you don't really have a ton to drink. Just like the warmth of that. And he would just like revel in something that so many of us take for granted, but when you're in those situations, it's everything to you. It's like, again, to liken it to Survivor, getting food on Survivor. It's like you need that mental like boost to get you like through the next week.
I'm sure too, it's a sense memory. It reminds you of being cozy and warm at home and like loved and somewhere rooted and grounded. And especially if you're in a, you know, on a expedition, whether it's as long as Carl Bushby's or, you know, one of like the explorers or even just being on Survivor. At the end of the day, we need certain things to survive as humans. Yeah. And I do think one of those things is community. And for him, I do think that the internet has provided a lot of community. You know, you can FaceTime with your family or whatever, but even so, like lying your head down next to somebody, there's something to that, or at least a cat, or
you know, something a dog. Living. Yeah, yeah, something warm.
Yeah.
I gotta look up his name because I can't just keep calling him the guy. Not that is Bear Grylls. Bear Grylls.
Not Bear Grylls.
His name is Les Stroud. He would drink hot water, but he took a harmonica to keep himself company because
smart.
You know, I mean,
it's easy to carry.
You want to curl up to something warm, but a lot of times those are wild animals, so it's probably not the best idea. But just hearing something in the silence, now when you hear it playing back to you,
burp, 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 burp. Or you're just in the forest on your own and you're like, what is that? Is someone playing a harmonica alone in a tent?
What the hell?
Keep walking.
Like the doomsday bunker I saw somebody building in the forest. It was hidden. So impressive. I need to send it to you. You should start something like this in your backyard. Woods,
the guy, does he use all the like logs? I'm on log talk. Yeah.
Yeah. And man,
he
cut a fucking down tree.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like Mario style. He goes down inside the tree trunk that then is like an underground thing where he just has like a little wooden cot with like
in a fireplace.
Yeah. But he was cooking fajitas and everyone's like, imagine you're walking through the forest and you're like, I fucking swear to God, somebody is cooking fajitas, or you're a bear and you're like, under this tree stump, there's fajitas. And that you're like, yes, there is, Mr. Bear. And it's there's tearing. A man to top it's it off. It's a cherry on the top.
Through the stump. God, yeah. Well, I would not put that much meat in a burrito if it's the same video I saw.
Oh, my
I was
God.
Like, that's so many. The burrito was as big as his head. And I was like, he's going to eat a huge burrito and then he lives underground in a windowless bunker alone. He's just going to fill it with farts. You have to fart out the air conditioner or fart out the fireplace.
You can't fart. Well, then you're going to. I mean, you could set something ablaze, but the size of the burrito, the ratio of burrito to filling was maybe the most egregious part of the whole video. It was like somebody in the comments was like, is this what he used? And it was just one of those blankets that looks like a tortilla.
Yes, it was so big.
It's so entirely too large. It was bananas. But all that to say, where there's a will, there's a way. If you're craving a fajita, even if you're down in the middle of the forest earth, you can make one if you want.
It's a little taste of home. It's what keeps you going.
Mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. Bushmi wasted little time heading toward Europe. In late 2024, he traveled overland from Azerbaijan through the Caucasus region. By spring, Bushmi arrived in Istanbul. On May 2, 2025, though some outlets reported May 3rd, he was granted rare permission to walk the Bosphorus Bridge, ordinarily closed to pedestrians. As Explorer's Web reported, he
strode across Istanbul's Bosphorus Bridge, officially leaving Asia behind and stepping into Europe.
This marked the first time he had set foot in Europe since leaving Hull in 1998.
Yeah, he was excited.
Feeling.
I know he's feeling. I mean, he wanted to like really walk that, you know, the length as a kind of emotional. I feel like you feel like you're truly stepping in. So then you have to like ask permission once again, like, can you ask the bridge manager? Can you ask, you know, but I think by the time Turkish media got on board, then the government was like, obviously, yeah, no worries. Like he was in Turkey for a couple weeks too, before the bridge crossing. So I think by 2024, early 2025, you've got the clout that like, you're not a secret undercover agent, that you're just a guy walking.
Just let him know.
Mission. It's just a guy. But he did. Yeah, it was crazy. The idea that you're just like, well, maybe I'm one more permission from a bureaucracy away from being stopped. I'm going to fucking lose it.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I guess it makes sense. But it's also wild when you look at it kind of time after time after time in a very, you know, Goliath expedition like this of how we're really just not allowed to travel wherever we want.
It opens your eyes, absolutely, that it truly is a structured overlord situation that yeah. we're living in. That it's just like the people in charge decide where you get to go and where you don't get to go and when and for how long. And that's true. That's just a true thing. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's, mm-hmm. You cannot travel. You can't go anywhere you want to go. No, sometimes you have to swim across the sea.
Yeah. Or you have to have a guide, or you mm-hmm. just don't get to go that way at all. It's interesting when you think of it all as just land, mm-hmm. how it belongs to anyone and why that's doesn't it belong to all?
And how it was
stolen from people.
In violent ways, a lot yeah. of violent ways.
Lots of violence. His father later described the razor-thin timing of this milestone.
After getting across, he went straight to the airport. It was that tight.
The crossing coincided precisely with the end of his 90-day visa, forcing Bushby to fly out of Turkey that very evening. For the following 3 months, he waited in Mexico until he could legally return.
Man, that's wild. You're like, anyways, I'm here. Okay, got to get my boarding Gosh. Pass and go back to Mexico again. I mean, it's again, the visa, it's just timing, bureaucracy.
It is, and it's so, yeah, and the 90-day thing is, I mean, I have friends that, like, split time between here and other countries because they mm-hmm. work in other countries, but they have to come back and, like, it's a good way to visit family, but you also got to pack up all your shit every 90 days and travel across the country to stay for a certain amount of time before you can go back. So it's a big, you know, rigmarole to go through, especially over 20 some odd years now.
Yeah. And especially in interfacing with random different governments who all mm-hmm. have different rules and different. It's like, thankfully, the folks that helped with the documentary remained for several years thereafter, and I think still are some of his big supporters and are able to, when possible, help him navigate the logistics of it, because it is very daunting to try to do it alone. And like, on dope, I would have given up. Oh, but if you yeah. have somebody that's like, we'll take the paperwork for you, or we'll help you, or whatever,
yeah,
that relieves a little stress.
I think the only way I wouldn't give up is whatever it is I'm doing it for. Mm-hmm. And if that is personal enough, like it is to him, then that is what keeps you going. You know, others may do it for like a charity thing or, you know, mm-hmm. bringing awareness to a cause. So good on him, because there were so many times where anyone would have been like, we totally get it if you're going to give up now. Anyone else would.
And yeah. No, he won't. And he's a stickler about the rules. And he's like, mm-hmm. there's several times I could have continued on and would have not had these like long delays if I would have just broken the rules. And he's like, yeah. Well, why break them now? It's like,
yeah. Point. Yeah. It kind of, you know, sullies the trip a bit if it's not as impressive to yourself, I think. I think you would let yourself down more than letting others down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, no, people will still, your dad's still going to love you. Your yes, son and granddaughter are still going to love you.
Bushby resumed his walk in August of 2025, flying back to Istanbul and restarting at the very point he had left off. He pressed westward through Thrace and on September 1st crossed into Bulgaria, thereby completing the Turkey leg of his journey. Reflecting on his time in Turkey, Bushby declared,
Turkey was amazing. The hospitality is incredible. People stop to talk to you in the streets. I made many friends in Turkey.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
And all friends that have visited there.
Turkey, of all places, I felt like had so much coverage. There were so many articles and everyone is like, famed British explorer, Turkey welcomes. You know, every city was like, Istanbul welcomes, this city welcomes. Like, so they were very positive and helpful and wanted to, you know, as much as they could, like help him get to where he was going. It's like a big family, like we're one big international family, like mm-hmm. helping our crazy uncle on his relay race.
Yeah.
Like, Uncle Carl's coming through. It's you guys' turn, okay? You're going to give him some tea and some like coffee and take care of him. So thank you to Turkey for making his turkey leg of his journey.
It is, though. And it's like, you know, not only do you want to congratulate him, but you feel kind of like this is our, you know, he had to cross through us to like finish his whole thing. So we're like the one of the last steps on his journey.
Yeah, like we want to help carry you through, man.
Literally, though, could you please carry me? Because I'm on my 57th pair of boots.
Push me on the beast, please.
Though the Bosphorus crossing was just 1.5 kilometers, just shy of a mile, its symbolic weight was immense. It marked Bushby's official return to Europe for the first time since 1998 and signaled the beginning of the expedition's final phase. The subsequent route he outlined stretched across Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Austria, Germany, and France, with the goal of ultimately crossing the Channel Tunnel service passage back to the United Kingdom. After stepping into Bulgaria in September of 2025, Carl Bushby set his sights on the final sequence of his Goliath expedition, a westward march across Europe to his hometown of Hull, England. From the Bulgarian border, Bushby's intended route was clear, and in comparison with the desolate Siberian taiga or the icebound Bering Strait, relatively conventional. He would walk through Romania, Hungary, Austria, Germany, and France, threading his way across the European heartland until he reached the shores of the English Channel. As Explorer's Web noted,
home is just 3,000 kilometers away. Bushby is confident he'll be back in Hull, England by September 2026.
This time next year.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Perhaps before.
Right? Like, he's got still a ways to go. It's not like, well, now I'm back in Europe and I'm here. But it is, I thought, oh, okay, well, it's like paved roads. It's not like a frozen tundra. His dad told the local Hull newspaper that the roads will actually be a really big issue in Europe because it's illegal for him to walk on some, I don't know if it's like a highway situation or just main roads where more traffic is. And so he's going to have to go to the side roads, and that, I don't know how much that's going to add to the mileage, but at least it's, you know, weather that's reasonably tolerable.
And you're on the home stretch. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel. One would think a year out, you're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I wonder, or is he? Or maybe it happened before. Like, at what point are you like, okay, I've got this. I feel like we're on the home stretch, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're still a year away.
It's still a year out. He said in an interview in maybe like 2 or 3 months ago, he was like, I'm trying to switch focus. I got to start switching focus. So I think that's maybe almost even a little, I don't mean to say hesitant, but the tone was kind of like, yeah, it's going to be different. It's going to be a big change. You know, kind of realizing like this is it. But I imagine you'll also probably go on some type of a speaking tour, book tour, documentary promotional tour or something. So I don't know that he's going to go home and like sit still. But it's still a weird feeling to be like, but I don't have to do this.
Imagine every news anchor in the world wants to interview him. Every morning talk show, 2020, everybody. The relative normalcy of this European stage belies its symbolic weight. Each crossing, from Bulgaria into Romania, through the central European states, and finally into France, draws Bushby closer to the end of a journey that began in 1998. In his own words,
"From there, I'll walk across Europe and reach the Channel Tunnel in France, eventually walking back home to the UK."
The sense of inevitability is balanced by the final great uncertainty, Gap 3. The English Channel.
Well, I guess he said when he was in training on the coast of England that from the spot of where one of his training missions was at or locations was, that he could see France across the English Channel. And he's like, you know, on a clear day, it's really far. You'd have to be a clear day. But he's like, I would look at it. And he said, there's been so many times where I transport myself to that and I'm like, feel like I'm on the other side. And he's like, even when I get to it, just being able to look across and see England, he's like, I've had that fantasy in my head so much from that specific cliff that I'm like, not to use a filthy term, but I'm like edging for him to get to this cliff edge, to the cliff edge. Cause I'm like, it's you know, something that you've like wrapped yourself up in. That's that warm cup of water, right? That you've been drinking when you're alone. So I hope he gets there.
Oh yes. The mental fortitude and like, visualizations that I imagine this entire journey he's had to do just to do the next right thing, as Frozen would tell us, is the mental gymnastics one must had to do to not just walk off a cliff at some point. You're like, I'm done. This is too much for me. But it's those little things like, one day I'm going to be on the other side of that and looking back over here and think about how proud I'll be of myself and how far I will have come, literally.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously. And he talked about despondency in certain days. He's like, depression hurt worse than any physical injury that I had. I'm like, I watched this man dig pieces of his foot out with a knife. And he's just like, I've never hurt more than this certain. He said it wasn't the whole time. And I went through, you know, certain times it was predicated by a breakup. So that makes sense that you're sad. But he said a couple other times it was just this like grip of sadness, despondency, loneliness, and this realization of, oh, humans aren't meant to do this. And like finding a person, reaching out, making sure that he had the connections, even when he wasn't physically connected to anyone, is what, you know, helped get him out of that. But he's like, I just told myself, my dad's had it. Men I've known in the service have had it, talking about depression. And he's like, I thought it must just be my turn to have it. And like, this is what it's going to feel like. Damn, dude. Strikes us all.
Yeah. That's scary to be out there and having, I mean, as someone who's dealt with severe depression for half of my life, to be out there in the wilderness in like the most roughest of conditions and feel that just like you're completely alone. Like you have, I mean, to keep going on is, he's got a mind like a steel trap, but also like the just willingness to keep going is beyond admirable and impressive.
Mm-hmm. It makes me want to like, I'm like, I want to take a little drink of that. You know, like I need to be that tenacious like this man. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood, Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/live shows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. Carl has made it clear that his preferred method is to walk through the Channel Tunnel's service corridor, a 4.8-meter-wide passage normally reserved for maintenance crews. This route, he believes, would satisfy his rule of continuous, unbroken footsteps, a principle he has held to for nearly 3 decades. As Backpacker magazine explained,
Bushby's goal is to walk back into Britain via the emergency service corridor inside the channel, the 31-mile train tube beneath the English Channel.
Yet this plan hinges entirely on permission from French and British authorities, who have never before granted such a request. As Explorers Web has stressed,
his only chance is to secure special authorization.
Bureaucracy again?
You better do it. You better do it, because now this is like the final leg, and he's back where like he's from. So if you guys fuck him now, I feel like a riot. It's getting across global riot because everyone's in on it at this point.
Yeah, we all need to watch and make sure that all these motherfuckers let him just walk through that. First of all, who is it hurting? Second of all, it's not setting any type of precedent, because if you're worried about precedent, let me, a lawyer, help you. Say, we are happy to open the channel to any walkers who have been walking at least for the past 25 years.
Right.
Then that way, you can just keep note on anyone who's planning to come there in 25 fucking years. Like, let this man walk 31 miles. He might even do it in one stretch. He's a badass.
Dude, like, if they were like, does.
Or like, oh, you can stop halfway, he'd be like, that's all right. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Let him go.
I feel like once you're in the channel,
you got to.
It's go time. You get that pep in your step, and it's like you catch your 100th wind, 1 millionth wind of this journey, and you're like, I'm doing it. I'm not taking a nap underground where there's cars and stuff in a service corridor. Like, I'll be in and out quick. No big get set. Come on, let me get the beast in the channel. Come on, come on.
Mind the gap. If permission is denied, alternatives are far less straightforward. Bushby has previously ruled out conventional swimming or sailing, since both would break his overland rule. Some commentators have posited he might negotiate an escorted passage that still allows him to remain on foot, but such options remain speculative and dependent on government clearance. In short, the channel crossing remains the final bureaucratic and logistical hurdle, echoing the visa obstacles and geopolitical barriers that have marked so much of his path.
That's not a bad idea if somebody drives behind you and you're walking like in one of the lanes. But to me, it's idiotic for the government, either of the governments, to want that, because it's going to cause traffic issues.
Yeah.
Unless you say, we, both of the governments, are so proud of you, Carl Bushby, and we're going to let TV cameras follow you and film this whole thing. And it doesn't have to be cramped in this corridor and we'll shut off a part of it. But it seems like a pretty important thing to like shut off or stuff like that. So let him wear a GoPro and just walk in the service corridor, you know, like you don't have to block everybody's traffic.
How long do you think it would take him to walk 31 miles?
Well, he was walking about 20 miles a day when he was doing his like states crossing thing. So, I mean, it would probably, I mean, if he wanted to walk like 24 hours or so, you know, like walk until it was over with, maybe take two solid days, otherwise probably half and half. But
yeah. So if you were to close it down, you'd be affecting a lot of people for 48 hours.
Yeah. Or even just like, we're going to just let him walk the last, I don't know, however many feet or whatever out in the open. Like if he does the service corridor for 30 miles and the last 1 mile, they let him walk out and like open that. I feel like that would also work, but like,
for sure,
work with them, people. I mean, they hadn't said no yet. I'm angry. I'm being angry at England and France who haven't done anything.
I think they're going to say yes.
Yeah.
No, it would be stupid for them not to. I mean, the publicity that they're going to have. But yeah, to block off like the last mile or two so you can get that shot of him just walking out alone by himself. Fuck yeah.
Do it. Do it. Do England it. And France, come on.
Have a smoke machine. Really go all out. Speaking of smoke machines.
Dude, it's coming. It's supposed to be delivered.
One has been ordered for the show this weekend. And in fact, this will be the second smoke machine that will be used.
Two smoke machines. And we have two cauldrons and two brooms. Watch out, everybody. It's going to be a good time.
And two of us.
Yeah.
And we have a lot to say. On broom, by the way, with our ointment. You'll learn about that in the show.
Oh, will you? Bring your ointment, ladies and gentlemen. Friends and family.
Looking ahead, Carl Bushby envisions reaching Hull by late 2026, closing the circle on what will then have been nearly 3 decades of walking. He has already reflected on the bizarre bleakness of that prospect.
It's a very strange place to be in, where suddenly your purpose for living will have a hard stop.
Carl's final march across Europe is not only the geographic conclusion of his odyssey, but also a personal reckoning with what it means to finish a journey that has defined his adult life. Well, to say it's a strange place to be in when suddenly your purpose for living will have a hard stop and you got a kid and some grandkids.
I'm sure he'll find a lot more joy once he's there. But he did joke, he was doing an interview with another former paratrooper, and trigger warning because they have a very dark sense of humor. They said, what's waiting for you at home? And Carl said, drug addiction, a wheelchair, and suicide prevention. But who knows? And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, yes, do military people sometimes have dark senses of humor? Do British people sometimes have, you know, a bit of a drier sense of humor? Yeah, certainly. But do we also sometimes jokingly say cries for help out loud in a joking way? For sure. Certainly. I know I do. So I hope that none of that's true, that he does not get addicted to drugs, that he's not going to become wheelchair bound. Although the temptation would be very high for me.
That I'm not going to fault him for. No. He's like, and I will sit on this couch for the rest of my life.
They're like, Dad, can you come in here? carry me.
Yes, bring like, it to me. I've walked enough.
Pick me up. But I mean, and then of course the guy like laughed with them, joked with them and stuff. But then I think what the real key for me was hearing this paratrooper say like, we are so proud of you. All the guys from the regiment that I still talk to, like every paratrooper I know feels like you are flying the flag for us. We respect you. You're so tenacious. You're so resilient. And he's like, that means the world to me. Thank you. And so hopefully he will feel the same that a well-loved, high-ranking general feels when they retire, or a CIA agent, or somebody that's like done a world's worth of work, gone through a lot of shit, but then can metabolize what happened to you and then deal with it appropriately and not just crash out like a, you know, a washed up rock star who's like, I got nothing else to live for. It's like, there's so much to live for. We want to hear your stories. Please stay alive.
Yeah. And, you know, if he's already talked about that he's dealt with depression during this, that's a big sign that it's going to kick in super hard when this is all over. And there's no shame in needing help for that. In fact, Carl Blishby, wherever you are, if you're listening, I would encourage you, much like, and this might be a strange comparison, but when I was pregnant the first time, I got hit so hard with postpartum, like immediately after birth, and it was very rough. So I knew the second time I need to have some things set up in place. So as soon as he pops out, I can get back on my meds. And like having stuff like that set up for him and even people in his life, like at his home, to have like things set in place. Like if you'd like to seek out therapy, we highly encourage just even to talk about your stuff, not even like process depression that will come up, but like a huge thing that you say has defined your reason for living is ending. So don't let that be your literal reason for ending. You know, I mean, get your ducks in a row before it gets to that point. So you set yourself up for success.
That's a really good point that he can, having experienced depression on the road before, having made the comments that he's made about the whole thing ending, I think it is a wise thing to expect that probably some type of post, not postpartum, but post walking, like you, this is an end. It's a thing that you're going to grieve. And also I think too, being back with his parents, you know, where his dad's still to this day, like been vocal, you know, in recent articles about, you know, how proud he is and everything. And then getting reconnected with his son and seeing his granddaughter and whatnot, but having all that ready in advance to where he, and I think for him too, he's holding out hope that this is going to become a documentary or something like an epic, you know, showing what it was like. And it should. I think we all want to see it. And so we'll all be watching out for that. But hopefully he can find a new purpose that involves, you know, sharing the world with your family now, because you literally have brought the world home. Right. That is all. You can't give the time back. And I think he still struggles with that, because when he was asked, like, you know, you essentially, in not so many words, the guy's like, see, you kind of left your son behind, right? And, you know, he talked about it was hard when Adam's mom moved him to Northern Ireland and he couldn't see him. And it was like this forced separation. And then, you know, you wonder if as a 20 something, you're like, well, fuck it. I'm like, can't see him anyway. I might as well go do this journey. And then some point you get far along. I think he thought Adam would join him for a lot more of it. So it's like Adam didn't want to go and see the world with you, but maybe you could bring that world home to him and create something that even when, you know, if Carl dies in 50 years and his grandkids, you know, live to see that long, but even great, great grandkids, like, I don't think he's ever in any danger of being forgotten, but like in his words, like we can tell his story, but his documentary is going to be so eye-opening for all of us as to like what the world does look like on the ground. You say boots on the ground was like brilliant. That's exactly right.
And saying and doing it by yourself. And like you said, really focusing on those lonely moments and like how that does affect us as humans. I think also it's we've kind of already delved into, so what do we think? So we'll just continue.
But you got to say it though, because I say it.
So what do we think?
Okay, go ahead.
Everything we just said. And then also, plus. It's now that you've literally seen everything, you know, like the best spots to take your family back to. Yeah. And you're like, you get to go back and maybe revisit some places and experience it in a new way with your family, maybe even like meet up with some old friends you made along the way.
Yeah. And also there's a ton of places you didn't get to go because you couldn't walk there. So true. Australia, New Zealand, parts of, you know, Africa, parts of Asia you didn't get to go to, whatever. So I think hopefully he will be well poised to share what happened and what he learned along the way. And I think also brag, dude, brag about what you did. He did so many things, you know, walking the Bosphorus Bridge. Maybe he's going to be able to walk the channel. No one has swum across the Caspian Sea. No one had ever walked from Alaska to Russia before.
The like, Bering Strait.
Yeah. So I'm saying you're that dude that fucking did it. And like, good for you. And yeah. So we want to hear from you. And he's written one book so far, but I hope there's another one forthcoming and a documentary and all kinds of stuff. So we all can feel like celebrate with him because yeah. I think you hear a guy is halfway through his journey across the world. You're kind of like, okay, so a lot of cheerleaders are going to show up when there's literally one of 27 years left. Like,
yeah.
You can wait until September 2026. Like, you can keep watching him for 1 year. This man's been walking for 25.
He's been doing it for everyone.
Yeah.
His benefit, mostly his own. But you we know, are all going to benefit from it because of the stories and knowledge that he'll have to share.
Is it the question of anyone daring to do something that's never been done before or something that is greater than an average human's capacity? There is going to be sacrifice, whether you're a sports, an athlete at the top mm-hmm. of your game, whether you're a politician and you want to be president someday, whether you want to be the, you know, top, whatever. There's got to be sacrifices along the way. And I think it's all of us. Hopefully we can get to share the satisfaction. He had to feel the pain of the sacrifice, but his generosity is allowing all of us to like get to cheer him on and like kind mm-hmm. of walk alongside him in a way.
Yeah, and, like, definitely. Well, we will keep everyone updated as Carl continues to make his way back home to Hull. And again, if you have met him, seen yeah. him walking, know anyone that has, please write into Freaky Friday because we would love some first, second, third hand accounts mm-hmm. of just interactions with Carl. Maybe yeah. we have enough where we can do a whole series called Interactions with Carl.
Incredible. Well, and yeah, and if you Google yourself, Carl Bushby, I'm sure you do out on the road and you heard this, like, killer, man. Keep going. Keep yeah. going, buddy. We're watching you. We're cheering you on, dog.
We're cheering you on. You've got this. You're on the home stretch, literally. So
for real.
We'll all be watching as the smoke machine and Mama, I'm Coming Home plays as you emerge from that channel.
Hell yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be like so get two fucking sparklers on either side.
Yes,
just shooting up. They're like, did an American design this? And you're like, yeah.
You're like, yeah.
These two podcasters, podcasters did it. They said, they're like, is that why there's a flyover? You're like,
yeah.
Military flyover, so good.
Oh well, thank you all for joining us on our journey with Carl and. We'll keep an eye on his and update everyone as we have more updates ourselves.
Hell yeah.
Well, if you like our free episodes like this one, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials. You can join for a week at any of the tiers, check out all the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. When you do, you get a lot of stuff. Like, what might that be?
You get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content. We let you all vote on what you want to see. Weekly audio bonus content. Just for signing up for free, just putting in your email and signing up as a free member, you get monthly audio bonus content as well. Minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much to everyone that's left 5 stars and kind reviews. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just enter your email, Like I said, you get free stuff like monthly audio content. You also get free access to Sunday Scaries. We just do it on Patreon because they don't censor us. So once it goes to YouTube, some stuff has to get taken down for the old YouTube gods. So join us over there on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. Man, the videos have been so great lately.
They really have. I haven't stopped thinking about James Joyce, and that was 2 weeks ago. So you tell me.
You'll also on our website find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2025.
And tickets for Season of the Witch this Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Texas Theater. We got to see you there, baby. And you can watch it on Keysway, streaming at home or on demand till Halloween. Go to sinisterhood.com/lifetoes. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or maybe you want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now. From happy birthday to birth announcements to congrats on whatever accomplishment, we will create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. Not only is it a thoughtful gift, but it is perfect for when you don't want to deal with the hassles of shopping, or if you're looking for a last minute gift, go to cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where can people find you on that?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on all the corners of the internet at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Melinda Noonery,
Gabby C,
Peyton Sparks,
LD2022,
Holly Hayes,
Isabel Brumberg,
Callie Brown,
Kai Shade,
Alicia Baker,
Lola Fashosho,
Mary Combs,
Maggie,
Jamie McGarra,
Sam Farrell,
Viblet,
Michael Arms,
Anna Nelson,
Nicole Jessica,
and Hannah.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounce your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
And vote for Anna. Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater, Season of the Witch. Begins.